So we have Bannock Rind here. Bannock, tell me more about yourself. So your title, your profession, and where you're from.
So my name's Bannock. I'm a very proud Yamatji Badimaya woman from Western Australia. I grew up between Perth and Geraldton and Northwest region of WA, and I've been living in Melbourne the last 9 years. I come from a nursing background, so I'm a registered nurse. I did my Bachelor of Nursing at RMIT University. I'm currently doing my Master's of Public Health at Melbourne Uni. And I currently work at the Koori Youth Council as the Deputy Executive Officer.
So, what got you interested in nursing, and what particular area of nursing interests you the most?
I think what got me interested, I get asked this question, but for me, it's like what got me interested in health, just growing up and seeing like a lot of preventative illnesses in my family that could have been treated like through a visit to the GP, have actually left them like, terminally ill and things like that. So for me, it was one, like helping family and community from the health aspect. But what that looked like, I had no idea because I didn't know that I would make it to university, let alone finish year 11 and 12. So when I did get to that point, I was in year 12 and I was just like figuring out what I wanted to do and I didn't know. And I was given the advice to just pursue nursing because it's quite broad. And then I tried nursing. I really enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed studying it. I got support from Aunty Kerry Doyle, who's like one of my biggest mentors. I always talk about her because if it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't have finished nursing. Yeah, from there, I just knew that, a career in health is something that I definitely want to do, considering the health disparities between our mob and like non-Indigenous mob. So that's what brought me to health and nursing, was just love and care for community and family and health. I think for now, because I'm doing my master's, there's no particular area that I'm set on in nursing, but I did work in like specialized nursing areas. So dialysis nursing, I worked in endocrinology and I worked in post-op orthopedic nursing. But I think for me, what I really enjoyed was post-op ortho, but also endocrinology. So focusing on like diabetic patients and things like that. And again, like a lot of my family are diabetic. So if I were to specialize in nursing after my master's, it'd definitely be somewhere along the lines of diabetes education for mob and like what that would look like for our communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And what motivates you to be the best you can be every day?
I'm laughing because I'm so demotivated right now.
I think, everyone kind of is. It's a new life at the moment. We're all trying to find our way through this unprecedented experience of COVID lockdown, social isolation.
Well, what's been keeping me motivated, I think, was just like, just remember why you're doing what you're doing. You're only one person. There's so much that you can do, but in the capacity that you're able to do it, just, your family, your culture, your community should keep you grounded and motivated. And so if I have a long day at work or if I have a long day at uni, I'll just come home to family or call family or whatever. And then just talk about like, oh, I'm kind of dealing with this at the moment, like what do I do? And they actually keep me grounded, but they also pull me up when I need to be pulled up. And I think that's what, like, there's nothing better than getting called out on your shit if you don't want it to be better.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's been the greatest influence on your professional work?
Like a list.
Is there a number of people that you look up to that you would like to model yourself on for the future, or anyone who's helped you get to where you're going? You mentioned Aunty Kerry Doyle before.
Yeah, I can't really, it's such a long list because I think there's just so many amazing people that have helped me to be where I am today. But I think if I had to narrow it down and reflect on the last 5 years, like definitely Aunty Kerry, like she's one. Family is one. That's always, family's always there. But professionally, like also Janine. Janine's definitely been like, still is like one of my biggest mentors, always supporting me in everything that I do, Janine Muhammad. And Dr. Tess Ryan, she's one of my mentors. But especially in the last year or so, she's definitely helped me work through some like personal stuff, but also some like professional stuff. So Aunty Kerry Doyle, Janine Muhammad, and Dr. Tess Ryan for sure. So Aunty Kerry, like she will be going through the worst, but she will literally drop everything to support you. And then just looking at Tess, like even though if she's not doing too well or if she's feeling sick, she will tell you, but she's not going to turn her back on you. And I think that's what I love about Tess as well, was that her ability to push through and just, I guess, her resilience as well.
How have your core values underpinned your work?
Well, again, I think just my work, if I want to think about it, like my work is my values, basically. Like, just thinking about, like, well, having integrity in the work that I do and having passion and love for the work that I do is underpinned by community, family, country, and just being an Aboriginal person. And then just thinking about, like, what's driven me, but also, like, everywhere I go, I carry my values with me everywhere I go. So, like, respect is one of my core values. And also, like, I think honesty as well. Like, if I'm not honest and truthful in the work that I do, then I don't have integrity in the work that I do. So I'm not doing something right. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, core values are so personal to everybody. So it's always interesting for me to understand, you know, what people's core values are and how it influences the way that they work, or the purpose or mission, not mission, I'm not going to use that word, purpose or approach that they take to life.
I think, like, when I think of values, or like if there's something that happens at work and we have to make a decision, and if it doesn't align with, I guess, like, the organization's values and direction, strategic direction, but also, like, on a personal point of view, like, as an Aboriginal person, like, trying not to mix personal feelings with work, but at the same time, it's like you got to draw the line somewhere. So if I don't agree with something and it's against the organizational values, but also my personal, like, work, because then that doesn't give me integrity to do the work that I want to. So it's just about, like, finding a balance, but also learning how to put your foot down too, I think. Learned that in the last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard. You know, one of the hardest things anyone ever learns is how to say no and compromise. It's difficult. A lot of people don't have the maturity to be able to navigate that appropriately. So
yeah.
What have you learned about influence, impact and leadership from the work that you do?
What have I learned about influence, leadership and impact? So again, underpinned by what I mentioned before, like family, community and just being an Aboriginal person, like, that's got all three, that captures all three. Like, influence is, you know, we are influenced by community. So, you know, me being a nurse, me working in Aboriginal health, me working at the Koora Youth Council, a lot of our work is, I wouldn't say driven by community, but led by community in terms of, like, having young people as key decision makers, and they're young people from all different communities all over Victoria. Or if, you know, so, you know, we're influenced by community, but also, like, the impact that we have is on community, but also impact on the broader population as well. So it goes back to, like, Aboriginal people knowing what's best for Aboriginal people. So whilst we're influenced by community and the impact is on community, but the impact is also on the wider population as well. So the rest of the 97% is what we want to reach out to, because if we want to change the mindset and actually bring about change to what we're doing, then we need to work with the 97%. But a part of that is also just bringing a lot of awareness to so many different issues that are happening within community. It's about, like, how do you work from a strengths-based perspective and build on that?
So getting to the question you've heard a billion times, what does Indigenous leadership mean to you?
I knew it!
And what do our non-Indigenous peers, colleagues and friends have to learn from it?
Yeah, I think, like, Aboriginal leadership, Indigenous leadership, well, one, that's different. Because when we think about the Western notions of leadership, it's always, like, singular. It's always like, oh, okay, we're going to follow this one leader and they're the key decision maker. But their decisions are somewhat influenced by the people. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's the key decision is up to them. Whereas when we think of Indigenous leadership, it's tied into spirituality, it's tied into health and well-being, it's tied in all of those key determinants. It's not singular, it's very communal. So with us, if there's someone in the community, like a female elder or a male elder, and whilst they're the leaders of the community, they look out for everyone. So we don't really have a word for leader. It's more like head of men and head of women. But at the same time, like, whilst they're looking out for everyone, everyone's also looking out for them. So growing up, that's what you would see. Like, you've got this elder that's looking out for you, but also you're looking out for them to make sure that they're okay. So, like, in a gathering, like, you know, taking care of them, making sure that they're accommodated too, but also knowing that they come with a lot of knowledge, but they also come with a lot of openness to learn from you. Indigenous leadership is a lot more communal compared to the Western notion of leadership. And I think currently in the COVID situation, and we look at the complete destruction of capitalism, you can see the reflection of leadership in that. So for example, like people are switching to ABC, or people are switching to ABC to listen to Scott Morrison, or they're switching to like Fox News to listen to Donald Trump. They just want to see what these leaders are saying next, because they're leading the way for the country. Whereas like in our communities, it's kind of like, okay, like who's doing what role, and how is that going to bring everyone together?
This might be a bit maybe too soon in your career, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Yeah.
Because as an Aboriginal person, you would see your industry and your profession very differently to a non-Indigenous person.
Yeah.
If you had a major influence on your industry and your profession, in what ways would you change it? And also, how would you change it, and what mechanisms would you use?
I'll talk about it from two aspects. I'll talk about it from like the nursing aspect and the health aspect, but I'll also talk about it from the aspect of like the work that I do with Koora Youth Council. If I had a major influence over my profession, what can I change? Oh, fuck, I would change a lot of things with nursing, the environment. I think, like, for one, and again, recognising, like, all the work that, like, Cats and Am have been doing in cultural safety, but also so many other organisations and places have been doing in cultural safety, is just creating an environment. And again, this work has to be done from the ground up, creating environment and creating resources that people are well educated on cultural safety. So it's cultural safety isn't just tick the box, oh, I've done it, but it needs to be an ongoing learning process. Mm-hmm. To actually improve the whole nursing profession, because, you know, nurses, they're in contact with their patients. Like, what, they've got a patient load of four or five people. And you know what? What's to say like two out of the five aren't Aboriginal? And if they're not receiving the level of care that they're required to receive, then like that puts our people at risk, and we're already at a high risk more than the rest of the 97% of the population. So for me, like if I had major influence, it would definitely be doing a lot more work in the areas of cultural safety, but also as for like how I would change that, like in a fairy tale world, I'd love to just go everywhere and just start delivering it, or just, you know, getting partners and stuff and be like, okay, like, this is what we're doing. We're going to do this weekly so you can get your shit together.
Yeah.
Again, that's in an ideal world. Like, who's to say that can't happen? But that's what I would love to see, and why I would create that change. Honestly, if we do something like that, we're actually creating a future of like rippling effects, where we will see less and less Aboriginal people, you know, having diabetes or having chronic illnesses and things like that. What mechanism would I use? Oh, man. So many resources out there, and I think so many those resources are those people. We have thousands and thousands of years worth of knowledge that sits on our shoulders every day. So with that being said, a more holistic approach to healthcare as well. I would love to see a health system where it well and truly embeds Aboriginal health and wellbeing as a core component of healing, but also bush medicines as a source of healing, highlighting the significance of holistic healing in compared to just focusing on Western medicine, because, you know, we have these medicines for a reason, and we've been using them for the longest time for a reason. So creating a health system where it actually accepts it in a way where it's actually respected and utilized. That's what I would love to see, and I'd love to have a major influence over that. And then from like the Koora Youth Council perspective, and I think what I'd love to see is youth participation embedded in the work that everyone does. So when I mean everyone, I mean like lawyers, nurses, health professionals, universities. If you're going to be working with young people, or if you want to continue to improve a system, then improve that system with youth participation, and having young people involved in that process as well, because it's going to be affecting them whilst it's affected us in the past tense, but it's going to be affecting them in the future. So creating a system where it well and truly embeds youth participation, I think, is what I would love to see, because if we have that, we'll be a better and fairer world, I reckon. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And young people as key decision makers will be a lot more respected.
As a nurse, what is it that you love most about your profession?
I think when I did it full time, I hated nursing. I was like, nah, I hate nursing. But I really miss it now. I miss the clinical work, because I think I miss something that was like mentally stimulating. Mm-hmm. But doing it casually isn't too bad either. What do I miss? Wait, did you say what do I miss?
What do you love?
Oh, what do I love? Well, I think I just loved like talking to different people every day and just learning from them. Like, whilst I was there as their nurse, but at the same time, like, it was very humbling for me to be able to be their nurse, I think, because for me, like, everywhere I go, I just like to think, okay, like, what am I going to learn from this situation that I can carry with me and pass on? But also, what can they learn from me? So, yeah. Like, whilst I dealt with all the shit stuff, like, every single day, but also, like, it was all such a good learning experience. So what I missed was, like, meeting different people and learning from them and, like, what they bring and just hearing about their life stories, because that was humbling for me. But, yeah, I also missed the clinical work. I missed that too.
What do you dislike about about nursing?
Let me bring up the receipts. Oh, I definitely disliked the culture. I think it's such a toxic culture, like nursing culture, like regardless of where you go. And again, because I have so many nurses that are friends, and it's like there's been a lot of research that's been done in the nursing culture that focuses on nursing toxicity. Yeah, it's just the culture itself. It's very toxic because it's you have older nurses that are focused on like, oh, but you've just entered the career, you don't know anything, which I understand given with like if you work in health, you need it. Have a certain amount of life experience that has influence on the decisions that you make because it is a life or death situation. But there's also that notion of like if someone's come in with like fresh eyes and they've just learned everything, then they're really more up to speed than older nurses because they've learned the new ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. But definitely I think the culture was probably one of the most disgusting places I've ever been in, where it's everyone's kind of watching each other, you know, someone's bitching about each other, where it's just like, let's just come in, just do what we need to do and leave. Like what's that doesn't need to be politics.
As an Indigenous person, as an Aboriginal woman and nurse, what is your unique perspective in those spaces?
I will start by saying, like, when I started working as a full-time nurse, I told myself, and again, it's aligned with my core values and just who I am as an Aboriginal person, I told myself is the day that I get used to seeing people as just numbers and just bed numbers and like room numbers, that's the day where I just need to self-reflect and see if it's actually really for me to continue doing full-time. Because I saw it when I was doing student placement is that nurses would do that all the time. Oh yeah, patient in like bed one. So that, and then they'll start calling that patient bed one, needs this, this and this. And I think it completely takes it away from the fact that they're a human. Yes. And they're sick versus just getting the job done. Mm-hmm. So for me, like what I saw as an Aboriginal person, is I don't want to say like people aren't empathetic, but there was a lot less empathy shown by other like nurses in comparison to like what had aligned with my values. And also as an Aboriginal person, like what I saw, like once I realized that I'm starting to see patients just as bed numbers and just me getting the job done, that's when I quit because I said, this is going against completely who I am, my principles and my values. If I continue and if I become like this, then I stop caring and I never want to be in a place where I stop caring about what I do, because then if I do that and if I get into that headspace, then if I were to go back and do community nursing, then the scary thought is what's to say like that would happen to me when I do community nursing, you know? And I think, yeah, something that I just saw and the difference was just the empathy.
Yeah, so just, like, it's interesting that you bring that up because being a nurse, you would be fully aware of the levels of compassion fatigue within the nursing profession. And depersonalization and lack of empathy are two of the critical sort of signs of compassion fatigue. How do you think within those environments we can reduce the impacts of what nurses see every day? Or how do we support nurses so that they don't depersonalize, so that they don't switch off empathy, so that they are able to do the job that obviously people got into because they thought they were going to love it?
Yeah.
How do you think nurses can be supported, you know, to be more authentic to their own core values?
Yeah, I think it sounds like such a big thing to do, but it's really not. Like that's the thing, because I've heard that question so many times, but I'm like, it's really not such a hard thing to do. Like all you have to do is embed the idea of if this was my family member, how would I want them to be treated, or what type of care would I be giving them? Like it's seriously something as simple as that, because every single day, like when I would go and treat my patients, I'd be like, okay, but if that was my family member, like how would I want to be treating them, or how would I want them to be treated? Because then that way you're personalizing it, but you're also doing it in a way where you're showing a lot more empathy. And, you know, like a lot of nurses, like they do amazing work, but they also really need to understand that, especially if they're at a loss of like being empathetic or lose a passion for the job, because it is exhausting and it is a stressful job. And we get caught in getting the task done, but also like just being reminded that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's literally a human right in front of you, like not just the bed number or not just the job, but there's a human right in front of you. And how are you going to start seeing that person as a person rather than just, you know, someone that isn't?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just something as simple as like, if it was my family, like how would I want them to be treated?
So from a health perspective, who are the Indigenous health leaders that you look up to? It could be, you know, someone that you know or someone that you don't know, and why?
Man, there's so many. So definitely, so one, Annie Carey, still nursing. She's an academic, like she's killing it. Again, Janine. Dr. Lenore Gaya. So she's a midwife. I'm pretty sure Annie Lenore's a midwife. And she's also got her PhD, and she lives up in community up in, I think, Cape York, but she's just amazing. She's like one of my favorite people. Like, while she can be so busy, she'll put time aside just to check in and make sure that you're okay. I think it just shows Aboriginal leadership, but also like just so much empathy amongst like how busy they are, especially like how well known they are as well. Uncle Mark, or Dr. Mark Wenatong, he's also one of my favorite people. He regularly checks in with me, like see how I'm going, but also like we'll have like some really big and deep yarns around like what's happening in his community or what's happening with me. But he will, like, whilst he will be worried, he always has the attitude that it's like nothing that we can't overcome. Like, it is what it is, but we can overcome it. And like there's so much resilience within that. Oh my God, Pet, this is such a big question.
I know. I mean, I know you've got like a list of 400,000 people anyway, but.
And I think like one of my favorite people is Rob, like, you know, Dr. Rob James.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think when I met him in the program, I was like, nah, he feels like he's like an older brother to me and like looking out, but he just does all of this amazing work, but he's just so humble.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's like Rob's like someone that I also look up to, because I'm like, but you're so humble and you're so amazing.
Yeah.
And Jordan as well. Jordan's so humble as well. I'm like, you guys are like,
Dr. Jordan Corey.
Dr. Jordan Corey, like, she's also someone that I look up to, because I'm like, you guys are actually killing it, but you're so humble. And there's nothing that makes someone more like approachable than being humble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the name of you that I can remember.
Just a few. Yeah, yeah.
Put a disclaimer. I apologize if I did not mention you.
What would you say to your six-year-old self about getting into the health professions and nursing or whatever else that you're getting up to?
Honestly, I don't know. I think I would just be like, I'd just be the same. Like, honestly, I don't know, because I think, like, to me, I'm like, a mistake is a mistake, but you kind of just move on from it. So I'm like, I wouldn't tell myself, don't make those mistakes, because then you wouldn't be learning from it. But I think I would just tell myself, like, if you mess up, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think my advice would be, like, if you mess up, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But how can you be better?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing that I can't think.
Something I want to bring up with you, which I'll be asking every single person this, because I think it's really important. What does allyship mean to you, and in what ways would you like to see creating impact and influencing in the health area?
I think it's important. Like, it's obviously really important to have good allies, because again, like, I've seen in spaces where there have been good allies and you've had Indigenous people advocating for that work for years, and whilst it had been recognised, it hadn't been taken as seriously. But then when you have like non-Indigenous allies advocating for that, there's a lot more recognition just on the basis of the fact that they're a non-Indigenous person, or like a white person. So in that way, if we think about the work and what we're advocating for, like, in that way, it's important to have good allies.
Mm-hmm.
it's about the change that you want to bring. But also, like, sometimes with allies, like, there needs to just be a line drawn, because, like, they think, oh, again, I've seen this time and time again, they think, oh, because I work with Aboriginal people, like, I'm also just culturally accepted. Mm-hmm. So I can say whatever I want and do whatever I want. And I'm kind of the expert among the white people. Like, I'm the Aboriginal people expert among the white people, whilst being a white person. Disregarding that, like, it's important to have allies, because, again, we're only 3% of the population. So whilst we're only 3% of the population doing the work of however many, like, I could say, like, at least one Aboriginal person that's working within community, or that's working within the government department, or working in not-for-profit organisations, or whatever it may be, that one Aboriginal person, respective of regardless of resourcing or not, that one Aboriginal person is always doing the work of two or three people plus more. Mm-hmm. Whilst we're only 3% of the population, and whilst, like, I can confidently say every Aboriginal person, wherever they work, they're always doing the work of two or three people or more, we can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're working to change things for our community, but we're also working to change the mindset of 97% of the population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't change the mindset of the whole 97% of the population. Like, we need assistance, we need allies to be able to do that. But also, it's their responsibility as well. Like, it needs to go hand in hand. It can't just go, okay, this is us and this is them. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't work like that.
So what advice would you give to allies so that they can be responsible, activated, and effective?
Know your boundaries. I think know your boundaries when you're working with, like, with Aboriginal people in Aboriginal spaces. Like, whilst it's important for you to be present, and it's important for you to learn, you can learn with boundaries, because more often than not, when allies have been in that spaces for long enough, they get very confident. And I think know your boundaries, but also know that, like, the work that you're doing has an impact, that, like, has an impact for Aboriginal people and within the Aboriginal community, but also carry the mindset that it's not all you, and you're not the only one that's helping.
Mm-hmm.
The word help within itself is problematic, because as Aboriginal people, like, we don't need help from you. But also knowing your boundaries, knowing the difference between walking alongside us and helping, because, we don't need help. We need people to walk alongside us to change the mindset of 97%, because we're only 3% of the population.
Mm-hmm. What is your unique vision for Indigenous people, both in Australia and around the world?
So, like, what I want to see?
Yeah.
I would love it to see a platform. Now, I don't know if it's created or not, but I want to see, like, different platforms and spaces where, actually, I've seen it. I just want to see different spaces and platforms where there's sustainable support for Indigenous people around the world to connect with each other and learn from each other. Because I was thinking about this the other day. I think, like, regardless of whichever country they're from, like, Indigenous people always have so many similarities to, like, other Indigenous people from, like, the other side of the world. So I would love to see some sustainable support systems where Indigenous people are able to network with each other and support each other. But also, I would love to see a world where there's Indigenous people present. Like, I would love to see a world where they're not the lesser population, mm-hmm. but rather, like, you know, we're on the same level as everyone else, but also really decolonizing a system that wasn't made for
us. Yeah.
So basically, the system.
Thank you so much for the interview. There's just some amazing sort of knowledge and some amazing answers and thoughts there. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate all your time.
No, that's all right.